KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church in Portland. Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories will be performed by Melissa Bangs, who studied with the Upright Citizens Brigade. This is her one-woman comedy show about postpartum psychosis and healing through shared moments, laughter, and tears. Again, that's Playing Monopoly with God and Other True Stories on August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Have you seen KBOO's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag FuzzyBoo and you'll be entered to win a chance to have FuzzyBoo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kboo.fm/FuzzyBoo.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or WilkinCPAS.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. As the fossil fuel industry targets the Pacific Northwest for massive fossil fuel development, communities across the region have drawn a thin green line of resistance. Most of these proposals are being vehemently opposed, but on either side of the Lower Columbia River, the largest methanol refineries in the world are poised to be approved. This morning, we talk again with Jasmine Zimmer-Stuckey, senior organizer with Columbia Riverkeeper, about the latest developments with Northwest Innovation Works' plans to build a gigantic methanol refinery in Kalama and the resistance that continues to build. Welcome back to Locus Focus, Jasmine.
Good morning.
And hope you're having a good summer.
I certainly am.
Well, we have talked before about this methanol refinery, and every time I think about it and every time I talk about it with you, I think about how it seems like still very few people know about it. And everybody knows about the Vancouver Energy Project in Vancouver, which would be, if it were built, the largest oil-by-train terminal in North America. People have heard all about the LNG struggles in Coos Bay and Astoria. People remember the Pembina fight in Portland. Why is this Kalama refinery, and the other one, we'll talk again about the Port Westward proposed refinery across the river near Clatskanie in Oregon, why are these so off the radar compared to these big fights that everybody knows about and are very hopefully stopping?
Mm-hmm. Well, those are great questions. The first thing I'll also give people a sense of place. One of the proposals is located in Kalama, Washington. Kalama's 30 miles north of Portland. It's a very small town. And then the other proposal is on the Oregon side of the river near the small town of Clatskanie. So I mentioned small town because small town is probably one of the reasons why people are less familiar with these proposals as opposed to the coal terminal, the oil terminal, or the big Pembina fight that happened right here in our backyard.
Well, actually, people are familiar with the Millennium Coal Terminal, which isn't that far. That's in Longview.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow that's gotten a lot of focus, whereas this methanol refinery is in the shadows.
Yeah, and then the other thing I'll mention is methanol is a slightly refined version of fracked gas. And fracked gas is still coming on to people's radar as a massive threat to the climate. I mean, as little as, 10 or 15 years ago, people were still hoping that natural gas would be our bridge fuel to the future. And that is 100% clear that that statement was false. We were misled by the people who were promoting it, and we have to get off of fossil fuels entirely. And fracked gas is not going to be our bridge fuel to any cleaner, more sustainable future. But that's something, you know, it still carries with it, you know, some kind of approval in the back of people's minds. And this project, you know, what Northwest Innovation Works is proposing, this facility in Kalama would consume more fracked gas every single day than all other industries in Washington combined, than all other gas-fired power plants combined, than every home in Washington combined. So it's no small amount of gas, but still gas is slowly coming onto people's radars as a threat to the climate in a way that coal and oil, you know, arrived years ago.
Well, I'm thinking about several conversations I've had recently about the term natural gas, and I noticed that you're using the word frack gas, and I think that this is an important part of kind of a rebranding of what we've called natural gas since, I'm not sure when, but long before I was born. One friend of mine in particular, Bill Bigelow, went on a rampage about the brilliance of that branding. Who could oppose natural gas? Because it's as if natural gas were natural. I mean, it's natural, it comes out of the ground, but
But we don't call it natural oil or
exactly.
natural coal.
And the real name, the chemical name for natural gas is methane, mm-hmm. which is one of the most poisonous gases before we even knew about climate change. I remember learning about the atmosphere of Saturn is methane. You die if you breathe methane. And certainly we've learned that it's a much more potent greenhouse gas than even carbon dioxide. So how do we go about, or how is this effort of like, referring to it as frack gas as opposed to natural gas, you think that can start to help shift the mentality about what we've been calling natural gas for the last 100 years or so?
I do think it's important to call it fracked gas, mostly because that's what it is. I mean, we are getting more than 70% of our gas here in the Pacific Northwest, comes from fracking wells. It's not coming from the traditional way of extraction, which is, problematic in and to itself.
It's a byproduct of extracting petroleum, actually.
Yeah. And so we do get our gas from fracking, and fracking is, something that people, I think, recognize as inherently unsafe, inherently, polluting groundwater, causing, wreaking havoc in rural communities. And the outcome of fracking is fracked gas. And so it's time that we just call it what it is. It's not natural. In fact, it isn't even natural to be sending, shooting toxic chemicals that we can't even know, because the corporations are allowed to, keep that information from us, hundreds of feet down into the ground, blast through shale foundations, and then, capture what comes out. That actually isn't a very natural process. So we shouldn't call it natural gas, because it simply isn't. It's fracked gas, and it's in our homes until we decide to switch off of it, and it's what's being proposed to be refined into methanol and then exported over to China to make plastics in Kalama and at Port Westward near Clatskanie.
Well, I'm thinking about the difficulty of kind of our personal life infrastructure, because long before I even became a homeowner, it was desirable to have a gas furnace as opposed to an oil furnace, and nobody had coal furnaces anymore. By the time I came to Portland, but gas seemed very desirable. And in fact, when we bought our house a number of years ago, we put in, instead of putting in a wood stove, we put in a gas stove, gas heater in the living room, and thinking it was cleaner, because we were mm-hmm. learning about all the particulate problems and the greenhouse issues with burning wood. And I think now about it's again one of these things. It's while we have to figure out how to get rid of our cars, the other part of it is most people probably in this country are dependent on natural gas for heating and cooking, and have thought this is the better way to do it. So what does it mean for us to shift our mentality away from gas? I mean, because this is going to be a very big expense for a lot of people. Oh, you need a new furnace, you need a new stove, you need. And then you need to learn to love electricity, which is still, and PGE was until recently talking about putting up two gas-fired plants to replace the coal-fired plant. So it seems like it's a really big thing to get our heads around the problem that methane is a very nasty substance that we need to stop using.
Sure. And I think that, the personal consumption issue is something that, people should consider thoroughly. But the reality is what you and I consume in our pipes at our homes is a fraction of a drop in the bucket compared to what a company like Northwest Innovation Works would consume in a day. Northwest Innovation Works, their methanol refinery, which would bring in fracked gas and refine it to methanol, would use in one day more gas than every other home in Washington State. So if we want to really talk about shifting our consumption in a way that makes a measurable difference, we should talk about stopping these massive proposals like this methanol refinery. I mean, I can switch to solar, you can switch to solar, but unless we can get every single person, you know, in Washington State to switch to solar, then we haven't actually reduced any greenhouse gas emissions compared to what this one facility would emit. And so the scales, you know, it doesn't even make it wouldn't even really register. The big thing is, and these facilities, they'll drive they'll create our energy roadmap for the future. If we create a demand by allowing Northwest Innovation Works to come in and build this massive methanol refinery, we have now created or allowed to create a demand for fracked gas, you know, for the next half century. And no small amount of fracked gas. This is, again, the largest methanol refinery in the world, using more fracked gas than all homes in Washington combined, than all gas-fired power plants in Washington combined. It's going to restructure the way that the Northwest, you know, depends on gas.
Well, the other thing that I wonder about, I mean, at least when you and I are using natural gas, well, let's call it fracked gas in our houses, we're at least heating and cooking. But what is methanol for? I mean, why would you even make methanol, and what is it used for?
Mm-hmm. So this methanol is destined for manufacturing plants in China to produce plastics. I think that we can all agree that, you know, the production of plastics is, again, something that we should be reducing. Whether we can, you know, engineer our way out of the climate crisis, like by making more plastics, I don't think that that's how we do it. And so this is not going to, allow anyone to reduce their consumption. This is all about increasing consumption of fracked gas and then plastics.
So why is it being shipped to China? Why is there this demand in China to make plastics out of methanol?
So we have, it's economics. The United States and North America, our gas prices are very low. You can probably see that in your
gas bill.
In your gas bill. Asia, in particular China, their natural gas or their fracked gas prices are 2, 3, 4 times higher than what we pay. So it is cheaper on a global scale to extract gas from North America, pipe it to Calama, refine it into methanol, put it on a tanker, and send it overseas where it can be used as a feedstock for plastics. So how that math works, you know, it boggles my mind, but it does work, apparently, or so the company tells us. And then the other reason is they're promising, the company, Northwest Innovation Works, is saying that this is going to help China reduce its coal consumption. And, you know, I think that's, you know, definitely something that China, you know, is trying to do. They've been set on that for many years to reduce their air pollution. But the company has not been able to tell us which coal-fired power plants are going to go out of, or which coal-to-methanol plants in China are going to go out of business when this methanol project goes online. They've been very murky about that. So we have no guarantee that this is even going to replace a coal-to-methanol facility in China, because you can make methanol from coal as well. What will most likely happen is we are just going to flood the market with lots of cheap methanol so we get more plastics.
Which is what we need. Well, it seems like even if they do shut down coal to methanol plants in China and replace them with these methanol, just replace them with the methanol becoming from Calama, It seems that what's happening is we're just kind of moving where the worst externalities happen, a term for big business making a mess out of a community or an environment or the climate or whatever, and not having to pay for it because it's not in their budget. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, with frack gas, there's huge externalities for all of the regions. Like, and I understand that frack gas that would be feeding the methanol plant in Kalama's coming from northeastern British Columbia, largely on tribal land, First Nations land. And so it wreaks horrible havoc for their water supply, for their air quality, for all the leaks that happen. So even if China's air pollution is cleaned up, we're just moving the externalities and maybe even exacerbating them to another place. And it's actually closer to us. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's all the externalities for people in Kalama who have to live next door to this plant. Mm-hmm. So how do we, is there a way to kind of use that as a hook for people here to understand why it's even a greater injustice than just the horrible outcomes of living next to either fracking or a refinery, that there's also this injustice in terms of a company being able to move its impact that it's not going to pay for just to another place, and it happens to be us.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think that's, again, one of the reasons why, you know, the fracked gas campaigns often don't see as much of the spotlight, is because it's very difficult to, you know, clearly see where the impacts are. With coal, for example, you see the strip mine. You see these massive trains with the big, with dust and blocking rail crossings. And then you see big terminals or big coal-fired power plants. And you can see the impact at every step, at every stage. With fracked gas,